Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, August the 1st, 2014. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Alyssa Ray.
Hello.
And our guest co-host, Emily Monahan.
Hey.
Jackie and Jenny are away today, and welcome, Emily, for your first time on hosting the show. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at cooperadio.com, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. So I have just recently returned from an 11-day trip to Los Angeles where I attended the annual Animal Rights Conference. It was an amazing experience, and every year I bring a little bit of the conference back to you. And I'll be doing that today as well. We have some audio clip highlights to share with you by just a few of the many notable speakers who presented at the event. Plus, I'll be giving my thoughts about how the conference went this year. And a trip to LA wouldn't be complete, of course, without exploring and discovering the bounty of vegan food that this very veg-friendly city has to offer. The conference was only 4 days itself, but the food is why my sister and I had to stay an extra week there, because there were just so many culinary delights to be experienced in LA, and we certainly needed that time to do it. So later on in the show, after all of this eating research that I did, I'll be presenting my top six vegan food picks of LA for 2014. But first, we want to chat about last weekend. There was a lot going on for the animals in Vancouver last Saturday.
Saturday, July 26th, was the fifth annual Veg Fest Vancouver, and it was a huge success. It took place on Granville Street between Georgia and Smythe, so right smack dab downtown Vancouver, on a busy, beautiful, sunny day. And it's great because it's open to the public, and people who don't expect a festival to be there just come to check it out, because there was music playing and tons of booths, from lots of great vegan food to different animal organizations, and lots of vegan vendors selling all different kinds of things. And it's one of my favorite days of the year. I just love that kind of most people come together and in one place at one time, and it's a real happy, celebratory vibe. And Animal Voices, of course, was there. We had two tents this year. We had our regular info tent talking about what we do on the show, and we had books for sale and info about veganism and animal rights, and talking to people about Animal Voices. And we also this year had a broadcast booth where we were doing live interviews, which were broadcast over the streets through two big, huge speakers facing in either direction. And we did some really fun live interviews, kind of like we were like a TV show, sort of like we're
We have Animal Voices TV now.
Yeah, it was really fun. And my favorite part of the day, I have to say, was I put together a playlist of some of my favorite upbeat vegan songs and animal-friendly songs, and just broadcasting those out to downtown Vancouver and seeing people kind of like tapping their feet and bopping along and asking me, who does this song? This is so great. That was a lot of fun. And I could see that positive music brought more people in to come check out the festival. And there was music playing on the other end of the festival as well. And I think that's a big part of the fun atmosphere.
Yeah, I have to say that music spreading them, like, a lot of those songs, you could really hear the lyrics, like, why dairy is bad.
Yeah.
Awesome. Or just like to be able to get that out there.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites is Jonathan Mann, his song about, like, where do you get your protein? Plants. and some really good hip-hop songs from the vegan hip-hop movement. Kevin Tillman, who's based in California. That's where I found a lot of great music. What was your favorite part of VegFest, Emily?
The food.
Yeah? It was just great to see everybody enjoying themselves and kind of engaging with the activist booths and also just getting a taste of some of the vegan culinary that was there. But yeah, no, it wasn't just the food. It was nice seeing people from the local community. And yeah, Fairy Cakes was amazing.
Did you stand in the extremely long lineup at Loving Hut, Emily?
No.
That went down like the whole block. I can't believe people would wait that long for a Loving Hut sandwich.
There was probably 40 or 50 people standing in line for the Loving Hut food cart because, of course, they have these amazing chicken, like
Gardein chicken,
fried chicken sandwiches, and they're really popular. The vegans love their fast food treats. And there was also Loving Hut Fairy Cakes. The Gypsy Cart was there from I think they're from Abbotsford, and they have really, really tasty burritos. And Eternal Abundance had some ice cream sandwiches and
I had one
fudgesicles, yum yums, and Saravana Bhavan. So yeah, there was quite a few things to choose from there on the food front, and lots of great animal organizations talking to people about what they do. And yeah, that was 6 hours of fun. And the time went by, I found,
absolutely,
so fast.
Cause it was 7 hours of fun.
Was it?
Yeah, 11 till 6. It was great. It did go by fast.
Yeah.
We had shifts and we had breaks scheduled in, but we didn't really take our breaks,
did we?
Well, we
were having so much fun talking to
people.
That's
why.
Every 5 minutes, someone new was coming along. Oh, hey, I know you from something. And just kind of really getting people excited about the show and meeting new friends and old friends. It was a real party. And
yeah.
I just really kudos to all the organizers and volunteers for putting together another successful Veg Fest.
I just wanted to say I wish we could have one every weekend.
That would be a little much for me as an introvert. But yeah, we went to Victoria Vegan Fest a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that was a little different because it was in kind of a courtyard that was covered. And you had to kind of know it was happening to go in and enjoy it. This one's just right open to the public. And I think a lot of people, got the message or were thinking in different ways after kind of walking down Granville Street that afternoon. And also that evening, July 26th, I also wanted to mention that Cowspiracy screened for free at the Downtown Vancouver Library. It was a sold-out show, standing room only. I can't remember how many people fit in there, over 100.
I think that's isn't that the Alice McKay room, 300 people?
Maybe.
Yeah, 300 people fit in that room.
Okay.
Really? So that's amazing.
Yeah, it was a great success, and Kip Keegan... No,
Kip Anderson.
Kip Anderson was there. You met him recently.
Keegan Coon.
We had interviewed Kip and Keegan on Animal Voices a couple weeks ago, and it was great to see Kip there in person answering questions after the film, and it was a big success. The film really impressed people. And there was, of course, a standing ovation after and some really great questions for Kip. You enjoyed the film, Emily?
Yeah, I did. I was actually surprised that it had such a strong, like, unequivocally vegan message, which was really great because a lot of those environmental films, even though they are kind of constructing themselves as being animal rights oriented, often kind of leave out the vegan message. So I was really surprised and really happy about that.
Yeah, and they went through everything from the humane farming to backyard farming and even wild hunting. They address like how none of those are actually really sustainable on a big scale. And then they got into veganic farming even, which I love. They like really went into it pretty deeply about what needs to happen and how to get the message out there. And I think it really provoked a lot of people to think about that question. Why aren't environmental organizations talking about the biggest cause of environmental destruction, which is animal agriculture? You had mentioned you might screen the film later.
Yeah, well, I was talking to some of my colleagues at Eternal Abundance, and we were saying that we would like to actually screen the film at Eternal Abundance, hopefully by the end of the month, just for all the folks who didn't get the opportunity to see it.
Awesome.
Every weekday from 7 to 8 a.m., Media Mornings brings you independent news and culture you won't hear anywhere else.
Daily headlines, interviews, countless local voices, and our Latin America report help you make sense of today's news from Coast Salish territories to global affairs.
Guests include David Suzuki.
Media become hostages of the corporate agenda, and thank God for the independents like you.
Indigenous activists like Pam Palmater.
This kind of radio show helps inform Indigenous and non-Indigenous people and hopefully inspire our Indigenous citizens citizens to take action.
Social justice advocates like Maud Barlow.
We are continue to be America's gas tank, although now we want to be the gas tank for the world.
Artists like Kenny Starr.
Change is created by lots of different types of activists.
Ray Spoon.
Gender is limiting and affecting everyone.
And authors like Michael Parenti.
The state is at the service of these corporations.
So tune in to Media Mornings, weekdays 7 to 8 a.m.
on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM and podcasting at w2media.ca.
You are listening to 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver's Co-op Radio. We're broadcasting live from unceded Coast Salish territories in what area is this? Gastown?
Definitely not Gastown.
East Village.
East Village. All right. It used to be the downtown
like New York.
East side. Right. So we just have a couple quick news events. Actually, there's just one major news story if you're living in Vancouver and you're kind of keyed into animal issues. People are talking about the aquarium. So big news, after three long special meetings on the issue of cetacean captivity in Vancouver, where the aquarium and over 100 members of the public were heard, a decision has been reached. The Vancouver Park Board voted unanimously in a special meeting on Thursday night to allow the aquarium to keep cetaceans in captivity. A lot of people who are anti-captivity are wishing the Park Board would have made the decision to call for a phase-out right now. The Park Board has ordered an end to the breeding of most whales and dolphins. Also, it was decided that the Vancouver Aquarium and park staff must seriously investigate alternatives to the exhibition of cetaceans. Further, a unanimous vote was passed to implement a third-party committee with binding oversight. It's likely that they'll put the BC SPCA in that position, and we'll have to watch and see how that committee is set up and what their powers will be. Marley Daviduk of the Vancouver Animal Defense League said that if the third-party committee decides that Vancouver Aquarium can't support any whales or dolphins coming from places of entertainment like SeaWorld and other aqua entertainment facilities, then it will mean that there will be a phase-out of long-term captivity of cetaceans. She sees this decision essentially as a phase-out without calling it a phase-out. Judging by the reactions from CEO John Nightingale and the Canadian Association of Zoos and Aquariums, some activists are calling this a success. John Nightingale reportedly stormed out of the meeting, and the Canadian Association of Zoos and Aquariums appears to be livid, according to their Twitter feed. John Nightingale told CBC Radio he's irritated and vastly disappointed. He said in the decision that there won't be breeding, he was saying that healthy animals sometimes mate, so keeping them apart or using artificial contraceptives or whatever method the park board is going to mandate is not natural. So it's actually a kind of animal cruelty.
Wow. Not natural. It's not natural.
To keeping them in pools is.
So right now they were saying that they don't have a breeding. They're not doing breeding. But by right now, what do they mean? Like at this moment, they're talking?
They've bred many whales in the past, and they've all died, right?
Yeah, and earlier this month, John Nightingale had told The Strait that upon their $100 million expansion, three belugas currently on loan to SeaWorld would be brought back up here for breeding. That's what he had told The Strait earlier. So they did majorly have plans to do this. So by saying they're not doing breeding right now anyway is a lie. And
I also read that they're thinking of suing the city because due to the recent expansion that the park board or the city had approved, they have recently expanded the tanks. But now if it's going to be on the edge of starting to be phased out, they want to sue those who made that decision. Interesting.
Yeah, John Nightingale had threatened because of they spent over $50 million and the park board had approved that in 2006. So they're like, you can't go back on your word. We were planning on bringing more in. So.
He seems to really like his captive whales. But what I see is that this is baby steps, maybe starting to get there. There were 3 days of people speaking, of 130 speakers, and many of them, I would think, were they were against captivity, right? So I think maybe it's just starting to plant seeds in people's heads.
That's all I have for the news today.
Well, thank you, Alyssa. I've been fortunate enough to visit two of the vegan food meccas in North America earlier this year, that being New York City and Portland. And when I was in Los Angeles recently to attend the Animal Rights Conference, my sister and I stayed for an additional week to experience the sights and especially the wonderful plant-based food that this city has to offer. Everyone always says that it's easy to eat vegan in LA because it's the in thing to do there, that is to eat healthfully, which everyone cares about how they look there, and that often equates to eating vegan, I guess. A lot has changed in the vegan scene in LA since the last time I was there in 2011. A lot of new restaurants, plus the largest vegan grocery store in the world is now housed there in Santa Monica. I wanted to try some old favorites and definitely some new places that were getting attention in my online surroundings. So here is an accumulation of my top six vegan food picks of LA for 2014. Now, I know neither of you have been to LA before, right? But I imagine you're pretty cognizant maybe of some of the hype that's been given of some of the restaurants in the LA area. For example, my number six choice goes to Crossroads Kitchen. Crossroads is really a new restaurant, having only opened in March of 2013. And you may be very familiar with its founder, celebrated vegan chef Tal Ronan, who is the creator of Guardian products and Chef to the Stars, including Oprah and Ellen. Now, I don't know about you, but I've certainly been hearing the hype about this restaurant, and quite, several people have personally told me that all of the dishes on the menu are all good. So the concept of the dining experience at Crossroads is to get small plates and to share it among the people at your table. So they may be small plates, but they certainly don't come at small prices. What would you expect for a fancy West Hollywood restaurant that is frequented by celebrity clientele? So what I had, really interesting and very creative, unique, I think he really puts a different spin on some dishes that you might not otherwise expect. So for example, crab cakes, what would you expect crab cakes to be made out of? That was vegan, of course.
Crab cakes. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't even really remember what a crab tastes like. Hearts of palm. So he uses hearts of palm, and they're like little cakes, breaded, fried, or maybe baked. And there are three little cakes made of hearts of palm for $12. I'd heard lots of good things about the kale spanaka pita. So instead of triangles, he made them in rolls, and there are like four little rolls for $12. Are you both familiar with what a rapini is?
Nope. No.
Oh, really? Okay. So I knew what it was. It's like a different kind of broccoli. I thought it was more like a young broccoli. It's like a small broccoli. But what I didn't know is that it's known to be very bitter. And the waitress actually warned me of this. And she's like, do you still want it? And I thought, well, yeah, it should be fine. It's got like all these seasonings and flavors added to it. And that's actually the one dish that I would not recommend. I'm really surprised that that it's even on the menu. Maybe it's an acquired taste. Because it wasn't $11 and it was my appetizer, I forced about half of it down. That wasn't too good. My sister had the wood-fired meaty lasagna at $16, and their desserts are really small. They are good, though. We had the dark chocolate roulade and cannoli. We also went there for brunch that week on Sundays. They now do a Sunday brunch, and I think it was maybe the first time they did a brunch there because it wasn't even on the menu yet on their website. It is now. So once again, small plates, kind of expensive. I had a Tuscan eggless frittata, and of note was that they wouldn't take out the mushrooms for me. So that was interesting because I hate mushrooms, so I just picked them out. So basically, Crossroads has a great atmosphere, expensive prices, and you can find them at crossroadskitchen.com or, of course, in West Hollywood. My number five goes to Doomies. Ever heard of Doomies?
Nope.
No. Okay, so Doomies. I've only heard of Doomies in the last year or so. It was a rather interesting find. It was right by our hotel, and I didn't even know. Actually, it's only been at this location for about 4 years. We only made it there once, and I definitely want to go back to try it again. It can only be described as comfort food, and that is fatty, greasy comfort food. So you're going to find foods there such as jalapeno poppers, chili cheese fries, fried calamari, soup salads, chili cheeseburger, barbecued pulled pork sandwich. You get the idea, right? It's a real hole-in-the-wall atmosphere, kind of dingy. It's got like all black walls, kind of like a punk atmosphere. It's in a strip mall, and you have to pay really expensive LA parking for it. I had the Alfredo chicken pasta there. I never eat spaghetti or pasta, but I was kind of in the mood for it. And that was good. My sister had this ginormous Thai chicken salad, and I have to use the word ginormous here. It was literally like almost a foot high and covering a whole plate. It was huge. She ate about a third of it. And now this restaurant is all vegan, except they do use what they call, in quotes, real cheese upon request. I'm not sure why. They do have amazing desserts. I had the strawberry shortcake, and my sister had, strawberry shortcake, posted on her Facebook page if you happen to have the chance to drool over that yet. And my sister had a luscious piece of mango raspberry cheesecake. Really good prices. They don't have a website. They're just sort of really like a grassroots. They don't even like, their menus are handwritten. So it's just like, it's really basic, but really good food, very decadent. Food. You can find them on Facebook, though, and that's Doomies. So number four, Cruiser Pizza. Very reminiscent of Pizza Pie in Seattle, which you may have been at before. Alyssa, you probably have. I love Cruiser Pizza. This is LA's only all-vegan pizzeria and more, too. They have really expanded their menu since the last time I was there. And I got to indulge one night when we were there to just get takeout. Takeout is best since they only have about four seats there to sit for dining in. So you can get a custom-made pizza or one of their specialty pizza pies. I got the Jamaican gourmet pizza with sweet and spicy sauce, vegan chicken, red and yellow peppers, onions, and vegan sausage. They use Daya cheese. They also have a good variety of other dishes on offer, such as pasta dishes, calzone sandwiches, and amazing desserts. Their desserts, such as the tiramisu or cheesecakes, they're only $4.50. And I have to say, this is probably, like, have you ever seen prices that cheap for a vegan dessert? I don't even know how much non-vegan desserts cost in restaurants, but definitely, like, way cheaper than you would ever see, in good sizes too, and so delicious. I can't recommend Cruiser Pizza enough. Like I said, it's kind of like Pizza Pie in Seattle, and I think that really every city needs a place like this, right? Don't you just wish we had we do have a little pizza place, but nothing that's really like really decadent and offers like so much more, right? And that they are located in the Los Feliz area of LA, and their website is cruiserpizzella.com. So number three is Real Food Daily. Ever heard of Real Food Daily? Come on.
Haven't heard of anything you're talking about.
Maybe I'm the only one that's really plugged into the LA vegan food scene, just because maybe I do go there about, it used to be about once a year. I haven't been there in 3 years. But I'm always, it's like always on my radar because of all these amazing places. When I travel, I really like to sort of fill in the gaps of what we don't have here in Vancouver, and then see, like, we need a Cruiser Pizza in Vancouver. We need a Doomies in Vancouver. We need a Real Food Daily in Vancouver. And that is a fact. Real Food Daily is one of my all-time favorites. I guess it has to do with the combination of the whole concept of the restaurant and the food and the atmosphere, their variety of wholesome dishes. And plus, it's known as a pretty hip place to eat at. The last time I was there, a lot of celebrities go there. I was eating next to Tobey Maguire and his buddy Leonardo DiCaprio. So they have four locations now, and the ones that I've been to are in West Hollywood in Santa Monica, but they also have locations in Pasadena and now at Terminal 4 of the LAX airport. So if you're ever there, you might want to head down to Terminal 4 just to get some vegan food options there. So their menu is what I would call casual, semi-upscale, all organic, fairly nutritious, and all vegan, of course. And they change their menu season to season, which is also really exciting, I think, because I never know what's going to be on offer when I go there. Right now, for example, you can get their seasonal summer items, such as a ceviche made of coconut meat and king oyster mushrooms. Ooh, or a sounds good
ceviche.
Oh, okay. Because is that shrimp? I'm not,
it's fish. It's fish. Like raw fish. Okay. Like cooked by lemon juice.
Okay. And you like it. Oh, really? Okay. So I have never eaten that, but coconut meat could certainly do the job, I'm sure, and king oyster mushrooms. And they also have a Vietnamese banh mi sandwich, and they have Caribbean quesadilla. That's right now on their seasonal items. So you can see that they do a variety of international dishes, and that's certainly represented there. Now, I've always been a fan of their nacho plate, and this is what we got this time, followed by a tempeh Reuben sandwich, which I found just to be so-so. It's actually only the first time I've ever had a Reuben sandwich, and I've never had a meat one either, but I just recently got into sauerkraut, but I would say I was a bit underwhelmed with that. It was okay, though. What I really enjoy at RFD are their desserts and their weekend brunches. I always go there for brunch, Saturdays and Sundays. So I was really impressed by the increased size of their desserts as compared to the other times I've been there years ago. Seems like they've doubled the sizes of their desserts. My sister and I, we shared a large lemon curd tart topped with fresh seasonal berries, a yuzu chantilly cream with a short dough crust, and that was $7. I think I posted a picture of that on our Facebook page this morning just to tantalize our listeners to get them to listen in. Also, we shared a brownie bowl. It was this massive bowl of gooey, chocolatey brownies amidst vanilla ice cream and chocolate sauce. It was so decadent and so good. For brunch, I had a tofu scramble with a chipotle seasoned sausage, onions, pepper, cilantro, and melted cashew cheese, and that came with a side of toast and hash browns for $13. They have a huge variety of dishes on offer for their brunch. Definitely recommend you check it out for brunch and for dinner as well. I will always go back there for the yummy brunches and to keep trying out their large variety of ever-changing menu items amongst their old favorites. So you can find them online at realfood.com. Number two, Alyssa, I'm sure you've been to the Veggie Grill, right?
I've been once in Portland, yeah.
Yay! Okay, so yeah, Veggie Grill is coming to be all over the West Coast now. I absolutely love it. It started in L.A., and there's a location right by the airport that I used to go to, and they're just popping up everywhere. There are several. I think there's four locations in L.A. now, and we went to a few of them. We actually went there three times. So yeah, every time I actually get to go to Seattle, Portland, or L.A., I always make sure to check out the Veggie Grill. It's known for its casual and fast vegan comfort food. It's a hit amongst the omnivorous population and as a result has had success in expanding along the west coast of the U.S. I think they're best known perhaps for their scrumptious sweet potato fries, their garden sandwiches, and their amazing my carrot cake, which is the best carrot cake ever. Veggie Grill keeps expanding its options though, and it now offers a variety of veggie and grain bowls and lots more entree salads and snacks. So speaking of snacks, I want to give special mention to two new items that I tried this time. And we went there three times, like I said, so I got a chance to sort of indulge in quite a few of their new items. So they had this char-grilled street corn, which is just amazing. It's it comes with the husk on it, and it's pulled back. It looks like just really rustic. It's organic sweet corn. It's grilled elote style and with drizzled southwestern mayo and a soy parmesan and cilantro. I got that twice. It was excellent. It was $3.75 each, too, and I thought that was a decent price. And then have you ever had buffalo cauliflower?
Oh my gosh, yeah. Yes.
Okay, so they have something similar to that. It's not the buffalo. I wouldn't say it's like in a buffalo spicy sauce, but they call it, crispy cauliflower. It's sweet and spicy, so it's sort of like both, and it's orange glaze cauliflower florets with panko breading. That was so yummy. Yay. So they do have multiple locations in California, Oregon, and Washington. You can check them out at veggiegrill.com. So for my number one choice, I am choosing Sage Organic Vegan Bistro and Kind Cream. It's actually kind of like a two-in-one. I've been going to Sage Bistro my last few visits to LA, and this place never disappoints. This time, however, Sage seemed to impress me even more than usual. It's a casual upscale place with moderate prices, and the food is really delicious and beautiful. So what I like about Sage is that they do have a large menu to choose from with a large variety of creative dishes for every palate. So what I had, I know you would love this place, Alyssa. It kind of reminds me of the menus that I see for your secret suppers. It's just like really creative food. For example, what I had to start with was Brussels sprouts with summer squash and tempeh bacon sauteed in a garlic ginger sage butter, and it was just so heavenly and just so tasty. Like, who thought Brussels sprouts could be so tasty, right? So good. It was a generous portion for $7.95. I would have been fine just eating that. But then I had the spinach basil ravioli pomodoro with a cashew and almond cheese for $13.95. I think there's a picture of that. Did I post a picture of that? I'm not sure. Anyways, The best part is that there's a Kind Cream shop for dessert made in, inside the restaurant. They make their own organic and raw cashew-based ice creams in the restaurant. It's a full ice cream parlor with many flavors to choose from, plus a variety of raw desserts such as cheesecakes. We had a gigantic banana split to share, which I chose as the main photo on our webpage at animalvoices.org for this show today, if you want to see that. It was so delicious. We had three kinds of ice cream, apricot, mocha, and a banana chocolate chip. So Sage Organic Vegan Bistro has two locations now, one in Echo Park and Culver City. You can see them at sageveganbistro.com. So there you have it. Those are my top six vegan food picks in LA for 2014. You can eat so deliciously and decadently in Los Angeles, and especially cruelty-free. And if you have suggestions of any vegan-friendly restaurants in LA that you enjoy, please let us know on our Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/Animal Voices Vancouver.
You are listening to Animal Voices Radio here on 100.5 FM, CFRO, Vancouver, Co-op Radio, in unceded Coast Salish territories. And now we have a couple quick events. We're going to be, well, one event Animal Voices is presenting on Saturday, August 9th, Endangered Turtle and Poisonous Pipes, No Pipelines on Turtle Island. That'll be happening in Strathcona at Strathcona Community Center at 6:30 p.m. So it's an evening event. It is a sliding scale, so free to $20, open to donations. And the main questions of this event are: how do we help animals being threatened by tar sands pipelines? In what ways are animals put at risk by projects like Northern Gateway and Trans Mountain? And finally, can we integrate the needs of non-human animals with ongoing campaigns for Indigenous sovereignty and environmental defense? If you, like me, are looking for answers to these important questions, please come to this event and join the conversation about defending wild animals from tar sands pipelines. So seating will be limited. We are offering free vegan cinnamon buns. We'll have 100 cinnamon buns on offer and delicious iced tea provided by the Vancouver Animal Defense League.
What do you need to do to get a cinnamon bun? Just ask for one?
Just come. We'll be giving them out.
Yeah. Nice.
Nothing. Do a little dance. No. So this event is being presented by Animal Voices and Vancouver Animal Defense League in partnership with the Earthling Liberation Collective, or ELK, who are out of Guelph, and they're presenting a full-day event on the same day, and their event is more about workshops, and yeah, their event is amazing. I wish I could attend, but anyway, we're on the West Coast. We're doing a smaller event just in the evening, mostly with speakers and Q&A. And we'll probably also host a short film screening. And I'm really looking forward to having this. We have a few speakers confirmed. I'll just go through them quickly here. One is Dr. David Steele. He's right now the president of Earth Save Canada. He's a molecular biologist. And he wrote an article for the Fur Bearer Defenders called "Pipelines Are Bad for Animals." And we'll also have Marcy Potter. She's a wildlife rehabilitator, and she's also with Fur Bearer Defenders, and she's going to be talking about how oil and bitumen affect animals and tell some of her stories of being a first responder and wildlife rehabilitator. So she'll bring kind of individual faces to these stories of devastation we hear when there's been spills in the past. And of course, there will be spills more in future, and more pipelines equals more spills. It's not a question of if, but when. And we will also be talking to some wildlife defenders and vegans, actually, who were up at the Unistoten camp, their action training camp a couple weeks ago. For those who don't know, the Unistoten camp is a resistance camp up in northern west coast, and it's a place where a total of 11 companies are currently proposing to run oil and gas pipelines through their unceded territory, and they're building up support there. They built a pit house, and they plan to stop all pipelines that plan to go through their territory. And so, yeah, we have a couple activists who just were at their training camp, so they're going to do a bit of a report back.
And excited to hear from all them. Also, the Wildlife Defense League will be speaking there as well. And this event is being hosted as part of the Shout Back Festival.
Yeah, and Shout Back Fest is an anti-capitalist DIY feminist punk festival, which is taking place here August 7th to 10th on unceded Coast Salish territories. As a part of Shout Back Festival, Alyssa and myself, we're going to be tabling, doing some vegan feminist outreach at the Anarchist Book Fair, which is taking place at Britannica Community Center, Saturday, August 9th from 9 to 5 p.m. I think it'll be really interesting to engage in that community because a lot of people are already kind of interested in the anti-oppression politics. So I'm really excited to do that with you, Alyssa.
Yeah, I'm glad it was... I asked the Shout Back if we could maybe coordinate with them, and they said, hey, do you want a table? And I thought, yeah, what a great opportunity. So I'm going to bring my collection of vegan feminist books to have maybe people look through, I think I might just sell them. You know, I'd rather have them out there. I've read most of them anyway, so what's the point of just collecting books if the wisdom isn't being shared? So yeah, that'll be fun. And that's kind of the main events that are coming up. We hope to see you on Saturday, August 9th, either at the book fair or at the Endangered Turtle and Poisonous Pipes event that evening.
Or both.
Thank you. And
hopefully both.
Great. Thanks for that. So the National Animal Rights Conference happened last month from July 10th to 13th in Los Angeles. It's put on by the Farm Animal Rights Movement, and it's an annual event that happens every summer and alternates between LA and Washington, D.C. each year. I've made a commitment to attend the conference every year now, and this year's event was my sixth one. So in attending for 6 years, since 2007, I have to say that it just keeps getting better and better, and this one was the best one yet. It's just a fantastic place as an activist to recharge your batteries and make so many connections with people, and also to learn about the issues that are being addressed today in the animal rights world. Over 1,300 people attended this year, making it the largest conference ever and beating last year's record of 1,100 people. I think that this movement is just getting bigger and bigger. And at the beginning of the conference, when the room was asked how many people in attendance were first timers, I was really surprised to see about a good half of them raise their hands. I think this is truly indicative of a movement that is starting to explode in growth, really and truly. I think the AR conference is a place to be to garner connections and learn not only from grassroots activists, but from some of the leaders in the movement. So I wanted to speak about, speaking of leaders, I just wanted to mention some of the animal rights movement leaders that were there. First of all, for the first time in many years, PETA founder Ingrid Newkirk was in attendance to give a keynote speech on the second night, and it was a really fantastic one-hour talk, and it left the whole room really inspired, and they gave her a standing ovation, but that seemed to be a common theme during the weekend. A lot of people were getting standing ovations because there were just so many inspiring speakers. Other notable talks by movement leaders were given by animal rights philosopher Dr. Steve Best, medical doctor and animal rights activist Dr. Michael Clapper, Farm Sanctuary's Jean Bauer, Dr. Melanie Joy, Colleen Patrick Goudreau, Last Chance for Animals, Chris DeRose, and Mercy for Animals, Nathan Runkel. Now, some of my favorite talks were presented by people who I had never heard of before, from new organizations that are really making fast strides in the movement. For example, Wayne Shung from Direct Action Everywhere. We had him on the show a few months ago, remember, Alyssa? And I had actually never heard him speak in person before, and his talk was so amazing. It just was so powerful, and I think it just sort of exemplifies the reason why one attends these conferences is because you just can't be so moved and inspired, I think, unless it's in person like this. And he really inspired me to become more active in the DXC movement now that I fully understand what it's all about. There were more than 120 speakers, and Farm really makes an effort to have as many voices in the movement represented on a variety of different topics, for sure. And there were some new talks this year, such as feminism and animal rights. And there was a panel called Tales from the Trenches, in which two undercover investigators shared their harrowing experiences of experiencing and documenting animal cruelty. And also, it's a great place to see, to be the first one to see debuts of film screenings. We saw Cowspiracy there. And like Alyssa mentioned before, the filmmakers were there, Kip Anderson and Keegan Coon. We got to meet them. And they also showed Speciesism with Mark DeVries. We've had Mark DeVries on the show before, and we did a screening of Speciesism as well in February. So any questions about the conference? This is your chance.
Well, I'm kind of curious about the tensions, you know, like you said, Ingrid Newkirk spoke and got a standing ovation, but there's a lot, like she's not popular among like my vegan friends. So I wonder, was there also, what kind of like,
you know, maybe I bet the people that she's not popular with weren't there.
Yeah,
so wouldn't that make sense? Yeah. You don't have to go to every single thing, right? That was one of the keynote addresses. Yeah, so that is always one of the criticisms of this conference. And I have to say, like, Farm's mandate is to bring all the voices in the movement in and not to, I mean, PETA actually hasn't been present for many, many years. And now I think Farm is really starting to change that. They're starting to really try to get fully representative of all the voices, whether they're popular or not. So I do appreciate that.
And I am surprised to hear, I think you said that it was the first time they had a feminism and veganism workshop. You said that was one of the new ones?
Yeah, and I remember too, last year someone online, I think, suggested that there should have been that, and they took that suggestion and they went with it. So I really applaud them for doing that. They just really keep trying to improve every year, and it's just, I really do applaud them for that. So the first clip that I'll be sharing is from a plenary talk presented by Steve Best on the history of animal rights and the abolition movement. Dr. Steve Best is an animal rights philosopher and a professor of philosophy at the University of Texas, El Paso. In this particular clip, he speaks to us on what animal rights is.
In their logic, moral rights, animal rights are the following. One, they are egalitarian. They establish intrinsic value for all beings who have value. Suffering is suffering. Captivity is captivity. And exploitation is exploitation for the animal rights movement. Building on this idea that human beings are fundamentally equal. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Then we just have to extend that to the next step and say that animals are also of the same equality, and in fact use utilitarianism to do this. Notice how these two logics, these two philosophies that have been so counterposed in modern history, such as between Mill and Kant, if you know that reference, these come together really in the context of rights for animal rights. We're no longer talking about, with animal rights, responsibilities to animals, being kind to animals. We're talking about the rights of animals, not our responsibilities to animals, the rights of animals. So we're not talking about kindness anymore. We're talking about justice. These are two very different topics. Kindness, absolutely. But it has a kind of condescending quality to it. And we realize that animals are equals, that we are animals, then we recognize that these are our brothers and sisters, our brethren in the evolutionary world. They are not to be considered in any other way. Moral rights are not just egalitarian, they're abolitionist. So when they demand not the regulation of exploitation, but the elimination of exploitation. Rights also are inalienable. Inalienable. They cannot be traded away. They cannot be bargained for. You cannot say, well, you can have some of this being's interest can be sacrificed for another being's interest if it brings a greater utility. No. Even if it does bring a great utility, this is the argument for vivisection, right? We need vivisection for so-called medical progress. No! Even if it does bring an alleged great utility, it's still wrong. It's still very wrong. That's what rights do. Rights, their interests are inalienable. They cannot be traded away or bargained for. Animal rights is rooted in an analogical argument. It says that if humans have rights, animals have rights for the very same purposes because of shared characteristics. It says that if racism and sexism are wrong, then speciesism also is wrong. Now let's be logical about this. The quick counter argument to to this position is that, well, there are sort of fundamental differences between humans and animals, or between human and non-human animals. There are fundamental differences. Of course, people of color and women have the same rights as white elites. Of course they do. But with animals, we're really talking about differences in kind, and not just in degree. We're talking about something qualitative and fundamentally different. Well, no, we're not. No, we're not, because we're really the basic moral touchstone for any theory of value has to be sentience and not alleged irrationality. No, we're not, because notice that the logic of equality is also a logic of difference. Look at all the people in this room tonight. We've got people of different ages. We have people of different genders, of course, and we have, to some degree, people of different ethnicities or races. And does that mean that because there are differences, we're not all the same? We don't have the same moral, innate, intrinsic value? No, no. And I hear we have some dogs in the room, too. I haven't heard any cats speak up, but I have heard some dogs. And imagine if we had giraffes or elephants in the room, okay? Does that mean that suddenly the moral picture of this room has changed? No. We all have fundamental interests. We all feel pain. We all have desires and pleasures in life that we want to be satisfied and that should be respected. And so there is, of course, difference. But these differences are not morally irrelevant. Factual differences amongst people between human and non-human animals, but they're not morally relevant. So the logic of equality really is a logic of difference as well. If we eliminate all of the bogus arguments that are used to buttress human supremacy, we come down to this. That rights are legal and moral constructs to protect any being that has interest. If you have an interest in living well rather than living hell, if you have an interest in that, then you have a right to protect it according to any decent, moral, philosophical, or legal argument.
So that was Dr. Stephen Best. Our second clip highlight is from the joyful vegan herself, Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. You may know Colleen as the mother of veganism, as she is sometimes called, or from her hugely popular Food for Thought podcast, which can be found at joyfulvegan.com. She is also the author of several wonderful vegan books. With a master's degree in English literature, Colleen is particularly fond of language. And in this talk at the conference, she spoke about the use of animals in language in a derogatory sense, and how such language depreciates the value of animals themselves. Here is that clip.
So again, furthering this idea of our use of language around animals and around other people is one of the ways you dehumanize people is by calling them animals, right? So that's one of the things you do. Now we see this throughout history, we see this all over the place. When you want to destroy, eliminate, harm another group, those that have the power have to, in some way, make the other one, the group that they're trying to control or eliminate, they have to make them inferior. And one of the ways you do that is by using animal language. The worst thing you could do is call someone an animal. But even more than that, of course, we have lots of evidence of white Europeans calling blacks, any non-white really, apes, monkeys, baboons, brutes, savages, and beasts. We have, of course, and this continues to happen, this is not over, but you know, obviously white Europeans calling Native Americans a lot of those same words, but also hogs, asses, dogs, and wolves. We have the Americans vilifying the Japanese during World War II, so of course you call them rats, snakes, roaches, and vermin, because if they're like you, you can't justify killing them. So you have to make them less than you. You have to make them worthy of dying, right? You have to make them inferior. We have, of course, the Nazis calling the Jews pigs, vipers, lice, insects, animals, swine. We have the Hutus calling the Tutsis cockroaches and insects. So in all of these ways, you have the system set up so that the ones with the power can call, can demean the ones underneath. Now, this is really uncomfortable for us, right? Because as people who also care about other people, we're uncomfortable that one group with power is demeaning another group. So we're really uncomfortable with that. But we're also uncomfortable with the fact that animals are being used to do that. So it's this, I think there's a lot going on when we, especially this audience, see something like this. So what's really interesting for me is first sitting with that and kind of being aware of that, but also what happens is so often animal activists are accused of anthropomorphism, right? This is a perfect example of anthropomorphism, where you take characteristics that we believe are only humans, but we've taken the worst of humans and say, well, that's not us, those are animals. So we take the worst characteristics of what are human characteristics, put them on animals. But if it's done in a positive way, if we say something like, my cat misses me today, she was really sad, we say, oh, that's anthropomorphizing. Or pigs don't really want to be in those cages, they want their babies, well, that's anthropomorphizing. But we do it all the time from a negative perspective, and no one accuses themselves, and how much we walk around accusing ourselves. They don't walk around saying, well, you shouldn't really call that person a monkey, because that's anthropomorphizing, right? This doesn't happen. So what happens is, in order to do this, in order for this to work effectively, we have to agree that there are these negative characteristics. It's not neutral. If I call someone a dog, it's not neutral. We have to agree that there is a characteristic we have put on that animal to say that when I call you a dog, it's a bad thing, right? So when we say that, when we call someone a dog, what are we saying? Dirty. They follow you around. Like, they follow you, right? They don't have their own independence. Ugly. It's been used for women, right? So all that's up. Snakes, right? They're sneaky, right? We've all heard these same things. If I call you a pig, dirty, lazy, fat. Yep, exactly. Yeah, or a cockroach or an insect. So the question is, do these animals all like embody these characteristics, or have we given them these characteristics based on our own discomfort with who we are and our imperfections, but we need to separate ourselves from them, and so this is how we do that, and we constantly, constantly do that. I mean, we see that all the time with people who commit, like, the worst crimes. People who commit the worst crimes. People who commit the most heinous crimes are called animals. They're not called humans. And animals don't do those things that we do, right? Now, I'm not saying go around and call people, call people humans. That would be the most insulting. Good, we have both. We are all these things. We have the capacity to be the most compassionate, and we have the ability to be the most violent. We have both. So another way this plays out, and we do this all the time, and I know we all do this because it's just we've all been conditioned to do this, is the language that we use, these idioms that we use, the violence against animals we use in all of these idioms that we have. So can everybody see these? To pig out, sweat like a pig, fat as a hog, hogwash, high on the hog, pig in a poke, cast pearls before swine, kill the fatted calf, cash cow, to shoot the bull, take the bull by the horns, dirty rat, rat race, rat fink. It goes on, it's going on, yeah.
Finally, I want to present a noteworthy clip of a talk presented at the conference by Dr. Melanie Joy. Melanie Joy is a Harvard-educated psychologist and in the animal rights realm is best known for her groundbreaking book, Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, in which she debuts the term carnism as the ideology of those who eat meat. This talk was about vegan successes, and this part of it starts with explaining the strategy we need to have to abolish the eating of animals and carnism.
In order to talk about success, it's important for us to define what we mean by success. Now, if you ask most vegans what our goal is, probably the answer you get would be, well, the abolition of eating animals. Yes, that's a cool picture. It's from hotdogsluts.com. And there's obviously truth to this, but eating animals is a behavior that stems from a deeper belief system or ideology. And we understand that eating plants, for example, or not eating animals, stems from an ideology. Eating animals is based on the ideology of carnism, which is the ideology or belief system that conditions us to eat certain animals. And we understand, it's the opposite of veganism, which is the ideology of not eating animals. So really, if we want to be very accurate, the goal of the vegan movement is not simply the abolition of eating animals, but the abolition of carnism, this belief system, the root of the problem, which makes eating animals possible in the first place. So in order to succeed, we need to have a two-pronged strategy as vegans, obviously. Obviously, our goal is to weaken or shrink, diminish carnism. But at the same time, we need to strengthen and increase or enhance the power of veganism. And so our efforts for advocacy should be focused on both of these things. But of course, dominant systems such as carnism also have their own strategy, which is to strengthen or grow carnism and weaken or diminish veganism. Now, carnism does this by using a set of defense mechanisms, which are essentially myths that are constructed. They create stories to get people to believe in and maintain the dominant system that is carnism. So, for instance, carnism teaches us to believe that there's no problem. It's wrong. Crazy vegans going on and on about nothing. And it teaches us to believe somehow that happy meat comes from happy cows. Now, there are actually two kinds of carnistic defenses, primary and secondary defenses. Primary defenses exist to validate carnism. The story that they tell is that eating animals is the right thing to do. Secondary defenses invalidate veganism. They tell the story that not eating animals is the wrong thing to do. Now, what's interesting and important for us to understand is that as primary defenses weaken, basically as we are increasingly successful, secondary defenses intensify. So for instance, once people are no longer to put their heads in the sand and deny that there's a problem because we've been doing enough awareness raising, then they need to somehow be able to say, well, at least the animals didn't really suffer. Make sense? Now, this kind of carnistic dance, as it were, this intensification of secondary defenses is a reflection of a backlash. What a backlash is a reaction of the dominant culture when its power is threatened. So it is vitally important for us to recognize that secondary defenses are a sign of our success, not our failure. And when we recognize secondary defenses for what they are, we can more effectively strategize. Social change, or I should say progressive social change, it's like a chess game. It's a series of moves and counter moves. I mean, the dominant culture is not just gonna roll over because we're pushing it. It's gonna push back, of course. And we can more effectively strategize when we recognize this. Because, I mean, imagine if you were playing a chess game, and every time you made a strategic move to put your opponent on the defensive, and then they moved to try to push you back, you thought, oops, I must have made a mistake then. It's not going to be a very useful way to decide what to do next. And recognizing secondary defenses can really help significantly increase our despair. Despair is the feeling of hopelessness. Despair is what we feel when we feel that the problem is just so overwhelming, what's the point? Despair is what we feel when we look at happy meat and we say, oh my God, after years and years of all of our efforts, despite all of our hard work, we've got happy meat to deal with now? The world's never gonna change. Except when we recognize that happy meat is not in spite of our efforts, it's because of them. We can transform our despair to inspiration. And we significantly reduce the chances that we burn out. Dominant systems depend on proponents of the social movement feeling despair. It's the kryptonite of the social movement, failure.
That was Dr. Melanie Joyce speaking at the annual Animal Rights Conference this year. If these talks have inspired you, maybe you'll want to attend the conference next year. It takes place from July 30th to August 2nd, 2015 in Washington, D.C., and you can find out all the upcoming details at arconference.org.
You are listening to 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver's Co-op Radio, broadcasting live from the downtown east side on unceded Coast Salish territories. That's about it for our show today. That's about an hour. That's all the time we have. We have so much more we could share, of course, but that's it for today. So make sure to tune in next week. That's Friday, August 8th. We'll be presenting a show about all things queer. We have Patrice Jones or Miriam Jones, and or to talk about Vine Sanctuary and queering animal liberation. And we'll probably also be talking about homosexuality in non-humans. It will be a great show. I look forward to it. Make sure to tune in. Thanks for listening today. All our past shows and links and videos, everything is on our website at animalvoices.org. I want to thank Emily for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Allison. And be sure to tune in next week, as I said. Be sure to be kind to the animals. Oh, yeah, and on our website, I forgot, you can learn how to keep in touch with us, and because it's good to know what's coming up on the shows and stay in touch. So our social media is all there. And we really do love to hear from our listeners. So if you have anything to say, whether it's constructive criticism or adoring words, you can send that to radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And we're going to leave you with a song by an artist called I Feel. It's a hip-hop artist who's made an all-animal album, and he wants to get it out to the world. So when I say all-animal album, it's he's written the songs in the perspective of animals. And the song that we're going to share is called Thank You, and it's a message from oppressed animals thanking activists for the work that they do for them. So I hope you enjoy that tune, and thanks for listening.
I like the way you make me feel.
I like the way you make me feel.
Thank you for the words that you say to me. Thank you for the things that you do for me. Thank you for your love and your energy. Thank you for standing up for me. Thank you for listening to hearing me. Standing by and never leaving me. I like the way you make me feel.
I like the way you make me feel.
Thank you for respecting our wish to be free. Thank you for yelling out, set them free. For showing us that life doesn't have to be scary. Thank you for shelters in every sanctuary. Thanks YouTube, every video is vital. Just a few clicks and let it go viral. Thanks for every Facebook like you share. Thanks for every tweet, let them know that you care. Thank you. I wanna thank you for being so beautiful. I wanna thank you for working to stop it all. Thank you for picking me up when I fall. Thank you for being brave to see it all. You see me on a chain, you see me in a cage. You see me on the knife, you know it's not alright. I see you in the streets, never giving up the fight. I see you shooting crazy footage, bringing it to light. I hear you clicking the mouse, signing a petition. I know you on a mission, they know it and they're scared. Thank you for the passion in your heart, you know it's rare. Thank you for every single bit that's in there.
Thank you.
Express my feelings. Look into my eyes. You know I can't conceal it. Feel my emotions. I feel your devotion. You know I need the sky, grass, trees, and the ocean. Feeling free, breeze in the sunshine. I wanna feel good more than just one time. I know you feel me. So I thank you for every single moment that you're doing something for me. Thank you for saving me from the evil hands. To all you vegans and vegetarians, one big thanks. To all you volunteers for the love that you bring. To all you fine earthlings doing your thing. For putting face in the face, there's warm hugs and embraces. Exposing the cases, closing down evil places. Thank you for the way you are. Thank you for the way you are.